Hello, heroes, and welcome to Backstory. I'm your host, Alex Roberts. Heroes, the One Shot Network's 4th anniversary Patreon drive is still on. As you may know, our network is funded almost entirely by listeners via Patreon. That pays for equipment and games, takes us out to conventions, and helps support the people who bring you these shows. We're bringing on some new contributors, and we'd like to get our Patreon to $7,500 a month. If we can do that by August, then you get to enjoy a sequel to the much-beloved one-shot actual play Feng Shui. So if you listen and you like what we do, consider supporting us at the $5 level. That gets you access to the secret archive, where you'll be able to listen to the first part of Feng Shui right now. You can go to patreon.com/oneshotpodcast for more information. Now, today's guest is writer and designer Misha Buschjäger, who, besides working on a new LARP for the Warbirds line, is one of the editors of Hashtag Feminism, an international collection of feminist nanogames, meaning games that you can play with 5 players or less, in an hour or less, with minimal prep. I'm working with Pelgrane Press on their re-release of this collection, which Misha put together originally with Lizzie Stark and Anna Westerling and a long list of brilliant contributors. Pelgrane is including a PDF supplement of 6 new games when you order a print or digital copy of Hashtag Feminism from them. And just to entice you, one of the games is by me, and it's about hugging. But anyway, let's talk to Misha.
Me and the husband at this time, but he's out of town, so it's just me, so.
Oh, nice. How lovely. I know a lot of married people have, like, the foods that they will eat when their spouse is not in town.
Or, oh, yes.
Like, that, like, music that they'll play. What is that
not
for
so
you?
Much, not so much music, just because I'm not a big music person myself. But yeah, there's foods like that I like that he doesn't. Like duck breast, for example. I love it. He's okay about it, so I tend to enjoy it when he's out of town. Also, like cheap, crappy steakums. I don't know if you those really, you know, they're not. I'm not even 100% sure they're really meat.
I'm realizing now. I have the cultural concept of a steakum. But we don't have them in Canada, I don't
yeah,
think.
Yeah, it's like a fake, it's like a fake Philly cheesesteak meat.
I also don't know what a Philly cheesesteak is.
A Philly cheesesteak is supposed to be, you take a ribeye steak and you shave it thin and then you fry it.
Oh, okay.
But a steakum is like chopped and formed into these flat sheets and it's sold frozen so that you then cook them up and chop them up and then you have this Philly cheesesteak-like substance, but it's not really a Philly cheesesteak.
Wow. That's so convoluted. And yeah. Also, it does sound kind of delicious.
Yeah, like, it's one of those things I grew up with. Because like I said, there you can get like a enough to feed a family of 4 for like $3. They're one of those, this is what I ate when I was a kid.
Right, yeah. I have things like that. I still crave Kraft dinner and hot dogs from time to time. A true childhood staple for me.
Yeah.
Did you game much as a kid? What was your gaming like as a kid?
Actually, I did not get into gaming until I got to college. Mostly as a kid, lots of reading, a little bit of video games, although I'm not great with the hand-eye coordination, so I was never very good at it. We had an Atari, and so my dad would come home when it was lunch break, and he would play Pac-Man and get a bunch of lives, and then he'd hand over the controller to me so he could go back to work, and I'd lose them in, like, half the time it took him to gain them all. I was not a big gamer. I was a reader as a kid. And I was actually really athletic when I was a kid. I wasn't necessarily good at athletics, but I was fast and I could run and I could tackle.
Did you play like high school football or something?
No, like just like pick up games in the backyard kind of tackle.
Ah, that's so cool.
Yeah, so I was a giant tomboy.
So what drew you into gaming? How did that happen?
So me and a friend of mine, we're freshmen in high school. We go to see a movie. I think it was Mortal Kombat of all movies, which was really a horrible movie. So we're but the showing that we were originally going to go see had sold out. And this is, of course, before you could check on the internet and see, hey, so we get to the theater, and it's in a shopping mall. And there's this other group of people, like, in the hall, like, the food court kind of area. And they've got some books, and they've got dice on the table, and they're playing Earth Dawn.
Earth Dawn?
Yeah. Earth Dawn, if you're not familiar with it, it's a FASA game. It's like Shadowrun, but it's the same base engine as Shadowrun, but set, like, 6,000 years in the future. Or in the past, rather. So, like, now is somewhere in between those two worlds. So there's still trolls, and there's still elves, and there's still... But there's a couple of other races that aren't in Shadowrun, and that aren't, you know, now. So we're like, hey, what are you guys doing? They were really cool at it. Like, oh, we're playing Earthdawn. You know, we normally play at the Georgia Tech. You know, oh, you go to Georgia Tech too. So long story short, they invited us to play the next day with them on campus. And that pretty much started it. I played with those guys for probably a year and a half till the GM graduated. the way it works out. Yeah. And yeah, that pretty much... started me on that weird path.
Wow. Where did you go from there?
So then amazingly, it turned out my martial arts instructors, a couple of them, yeah, I know, a couple of them, still in college, they were grad students, the instructors were. So it turned out, you know, one of them, oh, hey, I happened to play, he was playing at the time, Deadlands, which is another, it's a Weird West fantasy game. So, me and, you know, same friend, we're in the same martial arts class. She's like, oh, you guys play? Hey, you should come over. We do, like, you know, every other week or so, we do, you know, dinner, and then we play for a while, and it's fun. I'm like, okay, yeah, sure. So we played with them for about another, you know, year and a half, 2 years. Dated one of the instructors for a while. Broke up with the instructor. and then, let's see, what did we play? We played Deadlands. We played a lot of weird stuff. I didn't actually play, like, D&D. Until I'd been playing RPGs for a good 5 years.
That's so interesting. I love that.
Yeah, D&D was nowhere close to, like, my... And even then, it was like, oh, we're going to take a break. Hey! And I think it was... I want to say it was 3rd edition, maybe, that came out. And they're like, hey, let's try it. We haven't played, you know, let's... You know, it's new-ish. Mm-hmm. And it had a... At the time, it had a... I remember the player guide came with a CD.
What?
And the CD had a... character generator tool on it, and we remember that being the coolest thing ever because we're all computer science geeks and we'd been, you know, programming our own character generators for random systems before that.
That's so cool.
Yeah, that was actually one of my senior projects for one of my RPG classes. Was I did a Java-based character generator for Rollmaster. Which was a giant pain in the tush, but was, you know, it had databases and stuff like that involved, so it kind of all came together and it was enough to qualify for, you know, me to graduate, so.
Wow, that's so rad.
It was a little weird. It was highly dorky.
I was going to say, it can be hard to explain things like that to people like professors and people in positions of authority, but I don't know, like... If you're in a computer science course, computer science major, and like, come on, you can't be the nerdiest person there.
Oh, God, no. But you know? It's like, all right, so here's, it's like, all right, I don't need to know what you're going to do with this. It's like, it was enough that it was like, all right, here's the database, here's the front end, here's how I integrated the two. That was all they really needed to know.
Right.
They didn't need to know that it's like, oh, this is it. This is really, really, really nerdy. But it was fun.
That's so much fun. Do you find that, because I know you still work in tech. You're still managing and working with database, I guess, infrastructure is the word?
I do database analysis, so I pull data and write reports and stuff for clients.
Do you still find that is kind of a cool, like, dovetail with gaming? Are those two things still speaking to each other?
It can. The reason I did it with Rollmaster is really, really wieldy. There are literally charts for everything. There are, I looked at a character sheet the other day that we had made up in Excel. I happened to be cleaning up my office and found, like, an old one, and we had it in Excel, and it took up 3 columns per page, full page, tiny type. It was 8 pages long
to
list all of the skills. That's not even counting if you had spells. So this was, you know, Rolemaster was one of those things that was kind of born to have a database running the running the show. Nowadays, it's more focusing on like, oh, hey, let's make this character sheet kind of more, you know, either more compact or, you know, let's put the stuff that we use most of the time here and trying to smooth out things that way. Less database stuff involved, more design front end stuff involved.
Yeah, you're right. There's like a different approach to most contemporary character sheet design, which is like, how do we make this look nice and like be cool and design instead of like, how do we come up with a skill for every possible thing a human or demi-human could ever think of doing? So Misha, I had like a lot of fun doing the research for this episode because so much of it was just like looking at your G+ profile and reading.
Yeah, I saw you had plussed the duvet trick.
Oh yeah.
Okay. Like, this is so freaking useful. It's wild.
I'm putting a link to the duvet trick in the show notes, I think, because that like blew my mind. That like changed my life.
This is what happens when you just kind of wander through YouTube. It's like you find these random things. Like today, me and my 6-year-old got stuck watching videos of this guy has this giant shredding machine that he throws all kinds of random stuff into. Like he was doing fruits and vegetables, and he was doing random. And so we were like watching that for a good half hour.
That stuff is like weirdly soothing. Like I've seen the channel with the squisher.
Cool.
Someone just has this like industrial.
Yeah, the hydraulic. There's like actually like 3 or 4 of those. It's kind of freaking.
If you have a cute animal or an enormous piece of machinery, there's money to be made on YouTube.
Exactly, right? One of them I was watching earlier, they bought a $2,000 diamond so they could try to see what happened if you crushed a diamond. And apparently that it didn't break the hydraulic press, but it didn't break the diamond. It kind of embedded the diamond into the plate that the press was in.
Whoa.
So it's like, all right, the diamond wins against the hydraulic press.
What do you do after with that diamond? I guess
they were trying to get it back out. It was really in there, though, so they were having a hard time.
Yeah. God, yeah. YouTube is wild. Like, it just reminds you of the wildness of the world.
Yeah. Like, most of the time I spend on it is watching hair and makeup videos, which is kind of amusing from my point of view, because I rarely wear makeup and my hair is... I started watching it for the hair because I decided to go back to natural about when my daughter was about 3, and she's 9 now.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, all right, so if I'm not going to do this to it, how am I going to make it look decent? And so that kind of started down that journey of what do you do? And watching YouTube videos and seeing what other people do to their hair.
That's interesting. You mentioned your daughter. Was that decision related to your daughter?
Slightly. Part of it was time, because doing a relaxer and that kind of maintenance takes a certain amount of time every couple of weeks of, you know, I got to blow dry it. And that's, you know, I have really thick hair, so that's like a 45-minute process. Then once you blow dry it, you have to curl it. That's another 45. So now, now you got an hour and a half. It's like, all right, I got a kid.
Yeah, that is not mom time.
This is not happening. So it's like, all right, we got to find a faster way to deal with that. Then part of it was I wanted her to appreciate her own appearance and grow up, you know, being comfortable in her own skin.
Mm-hmm.
And she couldn't be comfortable in her skin if I wasn't comfortable in my skin. So it was a combination of the two.
Yeah, totally. There's like a role model thing there.
Yeah.
I hadn't even thought about like the impact of YouTube on like around black hair. I had a friend growing up whose mom was white, but her dad was, I think, Jamaican. And her dad was like, I don't know. And her mom was like, I don't know. And so she was just like, okay, well, my life is in a ponytail now. Like, that's my whole existence. But yeah, I guess like kids growing up now, you would just go on YouTube and be like, what do I do?
Yeah, yeah. And like me growing up, I either had like a relaxer or a jerry curl or something from the time I was old enough to take care of my own hair. And before that, my mom would like, you know, braid it into a, you know, a couple of ponytails or cornrow it into a bun or, you know, whatever. And, you know, that's one of those things you could do once a week, and it would stay for the week, and then she'd wash it on the weekend and put it back up. So, yeah, there weren't a lot of other options when I was a kid. It's like, all right, you either have to go to beauty school to figure out what to do. And even in beauty school, they didn't necessarily teach you how to do styles that weren't Eurocentric.
Yeah.
So it was a lot of press and curls. It was a lot of blow drying and straightening, but not a lot of, okay, here is natural hair. Here's how to make it fluff out into an afro, or here's natural hair. Here's how to do twists, or, you know, they might teach you cornrows and French braiding, but not necessarily. So yeah, it was kind of interesting.
Yeah. That's neat that your daughter is going to grow up with this like totally different concept of what is available to her.
We've had tablets and stuff in the house before she was born. So I remember the first time she's like looking at the TV and she wants to change something. She goes over and she pokes the TV and she's like, "Mommy, nothing's happening when I poke." Because she's used to phone screens and tablet screens. You poke them, something happens. Yeah. She was very upset to find that the TV was not a touch screen.
She's right to be disappointed. Why aren't TVs touch screens by now? Like, come on, TVs. And the people who make them, I guess.
I just randomly discovered that my new laptop happened to be a touchscreen. I'm at work and I'm trying to like trace through some line of code and I'm running my finger on it and my finger brushes up against it and moves across the. I'm like, oh, that's a touchscreen. Oh, that's fascinating. Okay, don't touch the.
It's funny what you get used to. We should talk about games more. I guess I, you know, I just want to talk about makeup more because like you're always, I think it's so funny that you're like, oh yeah, I never wear makeup because you always post these amazing looks that are just like, okay, go.
Here's the funny thing. So most of my looks involved at most like three things. Mm-hmm. It's a lipstick, it's an eyeliner, and it's maybe I take an eye pencil and swish it over the rest of my eyelid. And that's about it. I don't wear blush because I've never managed to get a blush that doesn't make me look like a clown, or at least that doesn't make me think that I look like a clown. I probably don't actually look like a clown, but that's what I see in my head.
Yeah, and that's,
I'm not a fan of foundation. It just makes my face feel weird to me. Again, probably because I'm not used to it.
Yeah.
Monday was my birthday, so I went out and I like, all right, I'm gonna learn a new skill. So I went to Sephora and like, show me how to do a smoky eye. And she's like, here's a 2-minute smoky eye. I'm like, yeah, smudge it over your eyelid, and then you smush this, and poof. I'm like, huh, that's all? Really? That's it? Okay, I can do that.
That's the coveted smoky eye?
That's it? Okay.
I should go to Sephora. I want my eyes to be smoky. I'm definitely that person who figured out how to use makeup only like at the age of like 25. So I pretty much just have one look.
Yeah. Yeah. I was like 39 somewhere in there before I figured it out. So you're ahead of the curve as far as I'm concerned.
Okay. I feel a little better. Okay. Inspiring makeup looks. Let me see. Other exciting things on your Google Plus profile include like pretty much every cool thing that women are up to in the gaming community. Like every cool thing, you're just like, hey, check this out. Is that something that you deliberately do? Like, yeah, I'm going to promote awesome women's work on my feeds.
Partly. Most of the times it's somebody I know is involved in it, or I'm involved in it, or... it's something that I think it might not necessarily be my cup of tea, but I think that it should exist. So a lot of it comes from that. Like,
I'm interested in the idea of like, I know that I'm not going to play it, but I still want to back it because I think a lot of people do that or feel that way. And I wonder what do you mean by that? Like, what makes you feel that way about a game?
So for example, Apocalypse World is actually an excellent example. I am not a fan of post-apocalyptic, personally. It's not my jam. I'll play it if, you know, that's what's going on, but it's not necessarily, it wouldn't be my first choice. But the stuff that's come out of the Apocalypse World, powered by the Apocalypse, the whole revolution, around it, I thought was really important. 14 days. The one about my grades. It's not necessarily my jam, but I think it's important to show that aspect, that how people live with a disability, and how people have to deal with managing their own mental processes in a way that I don't necessarily have to.
What are some games that you have just been like 100% like, oh my god, I want to know?
My current one is The Watch. I really, 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 really want it now. I finally got to play it this weekend at Camp Nerdly, and it was pretty much as good as I thought it would be. I want a campaign of it. I want a campaign of it now.
Yeah.
I backed Apillion because I thought it would be a great game to play with my daughter. You know, hey, you get to be baby dragons, and she's like, yes. So,
yay.
My friend Daniel, he has a daughter who's the same age as my daughter. They went to pre-K together and have been friends since they were like three. So we had a campaign with the two of them and me, and he ran it for us. And so they got to play Baby Dragons and they had a great time. And it probably wasn't what, you know, the game was meant to do, because like I've got another game of it where it's like, all right, it's a bunch of grown-ups playing Baby Dragons. Totally different experience than with a couple of eight-year-olds.
Yeah.
But they had a blast.
What a wonderful introduction to gaming, to get to game with her mom and everything. Like, that's so cool.
Let's see what else. I'm working on a game with Mo. We're doing Nightingales. You get to do the playtest of that. It's about nurses. The playset that we were starting with is nurses in World War II in Northern Africa, Casablanca area. Mm-hmm. I think I'm going to also do a playset of black nurses in the Spanish Civil War, the Spanish-American War in Havana.
Okay, so tell me more about that.
It was one of the... black women haven't necessarily... It was before the Nurses Corps... the Army Nurse Corps was founded during the Spanish-American War. The Army Nurse Corps didn't really get founded until World War I, but they found that they needed nurses, and black women in droves apparently showed up to do the work during the Spanish-American War, and went to Cuba to serve the soldiers, and some of them were treated still pretty crappily, you know, because, you know, racism's a thing, and you know, hey, so now we got this double thing of sexism and racism, and we're just gonna call it awesome. And but they still wanted to serve their country, and to honor that is important to me. My mom's a nurse, my mom was in the army, my husband's grandmother was a nurse. It's serving our country is a thing that my family has always done. So it's important to me to make sure that those stories get out there and are told.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I've played a version of the Casablanca one, which is coming together very nicely. It's such an interesting scenario. It's so fun to get to NPC for each other and have your little spotlights, and, it works well as an educational piece. I'm wondering what the research process for that game has been like.
So it's a lot of poring over Wikipedia, and then from there going to the links to like army.mil and some of the archives there, reading books that were written kind of contemporaneously, I can say that word, to the time, and just seeing, you know, firsthand accounts, seeing what nurses have written about in their memoirs afterwards, checking, you know, it's like, all right, this is how the campaign moved. The hospital that we're sitting at is pretty much a real hospital that existed at the time.
Yeah.
So there are some records of, you know, hey, Churchill came through in, you know, 1943 to get something operated on, you know, while he was moving from on his way to Malta, or to have the big summit with the other leaders of the Allies. So there are some like actual interesting documents that are specific to that area and time.
Mm-hmm.
So incorporating some of that and then taking some license with it. It's like, all right, so these are the actual historical ranks. We'll make sure those are incorporated. This is a list of names that are kind of common in the area. We'll take that and we'll use that for some of the NPCs. The PCs and like the soldiers and stuff are combinations. Me, Rachel, and Mo each made a chunk of them separately. and they combine them all together. So they're like a combination of, all right, I'm going to take my dad's name and one of my uncle's backgrounds, and we're going to mix them together, and this is kind of this guy. Or one of the nurses is pretty much my mother's story with my husband's grandmother's name, and we're going to push those together, and hey, now we got a PC. So it's a combination of taking stuff from your own life, taking the stuff you've read, smushing together, and putting it out there as a fictional person.
So there's a lot of personal stuff in that game for you.
Yeah, and it was kind of funny when Mo first came to us, it turns out that Rachel also has nurses in her background, and so is Mo. And so we didn't know that at the time when she approached us about, hey, this is what I want to do. And it was just kind of like serendipity that we all did have that connection, and that was important to us all. So,
oh, that's really cool. That sounds really satisfying to get to connect to your family history in this game design way.
It is. It's different. The last big thing I wrote for was Chill, where I had to make like NPCs for the book, and so again it was like, all right, so if you kind of look through the names of the NPCs I created, you can kind of see random bits of my family, you know, both sides, you know, scattered here and there, and you know, a callback here. If you didn't know me, you wouldn't notice it. But if like my mom, I showed it to her, she's like, hey, I know that name. And so it was like kind of these little Easter eggs for her to read through. She didn't understand anything else about the rest of the game, but she's got the little references, right, and was happy.
That's so neat. Yeah. So what has playtesting Nightingale's been like so far?
So far it's been really good. We've figured out that the core mechanic that we wanted it to do with the players NPCing for each other and switching, and you know, the holding the hands and the connecting, that's what we really wanted to get across, and how much of nursing is just pure emotional labor, and it's about helping the patient emotionally far more than it is about helping the patient physically. It's a different, like, a medic is there to you know, patch you up. A nurse is there to hold your hand and help you heal. Or, she might be there to kick your ass, you know. But it's more, nursing, we found, is actually far more about emotional labor than it is about physical labor. The physical labor part is there. It's backbreaking work. My mother had to get her knees replaced because, it's standing on your feet, you know, 20 hours a day sometimes. Mm-hmm. It's not physically easy, but emotionally it's there too. So we found that mechanic of sitting face to face, talking to each other, holding your wrist, holding an arm, being that close, did help everybody connect to that emotional chunk, and pretty much got across what we wanted to. And so we're really happy that mechanic that we thought up worked right off the gate. So now we're just kind of tweaking. I realized I skipped an entire phase with one group that I did a playtest for. It's like, oh, makes sense when you say it out loud. That's what that instruction meant. And kind of cleaning up stuff for stuff going forward.
So what form are the Nightingale's games going to be taking? So my understanding is that, there's Warbirds, which is just the general line of, a bunch of games that Mo is involved in that have to do with women in war. And then the Nightingale's games are all about this. And then the locations are like playsets, basically?
Yeah, basically. So the way we're doing it now is each playset will be a deck of cards with PCs, NPCs, and then guidance for the setting. So one of a chunk of the cards will have, you know, these are the instructions for how to run the playset. It's like timing of... your first scene is going to be this. This is where you're going to be. This is something, is the information about the background of the time and the area and what's going on in that particular war. And then so your chunks will be flavor text, and then the NPCs and PCs will be geared towards evoking the flavor of the setting, of the playset setting, in a separate deck. Ideally, we'll make them like 52 card decks. We'll see if that actually works out or not. Just 'cause, yeah. We'll see how it works.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you, like, I get requests all the time and questions all the time from listeners who don't get to LARP much or who want to try LARPing for the first time. And people are really looking for, like, what is just, like, the one thing that I can buy and I can bring it home and then play it in my living room with five people. And I'm like, oh my gosh, gotta get these Nightingales games out because they're, like, totally 100% that to the max.
Yeah.
Or they will be.
We're kind of hoping. Moe's Lumberjills is another one that would be good for that. It's also, and she did Lumberjills first, and so that's where we kind of get the idea of having the physical mechanic on top of the rest of it. It's another four-person, your female lumberjacks in the, you know, wilds. I think she sits it in Europe. I can't remember if it's either Europe or Canada. And you're finding love and dancing and working during the day. So it's another cool, easy one. You don't have to have costumes. You don't have to have a lot of work. You don't have to have a lot of props. You just need the deck of cards and you can go for it.
Yeah. Oh, that's so nice. I love that format. Okay. Speaking of extremely accessible, interesting, fun games, also about women, I want to talk about hashtag feminism.
Awesome.
Yeah. So tell me about like the genesis of this project. Tell me of how you guys got it started.
So for the last few years, Lizzie Stark, Jason Morningstar, and James Stewart have put together a kind of a mini con, like 50 people or so. So I guess it's, oh wow, it's actually been 2 years. 2 years ago, Lizzie said, hey, I've got this idea. I want to do an entry for Fastival that is a bunch of games with a feminist bent, because she was she was having fun with it with the festival guys, and I want to do a collection of them, and I'd like, you know, anybody who's here to help me write it. So we had a meeting there with anybody with a bunch of the people who eventually did come and work on it with us, and said, hey, you know, these are the things we want to talk about. What are some of the topics that cover? So by the end of that, you know, 1 hour, we had a 1 hour lunch meeting. By the end of that, we had, like, you know, a couple of giant poster board size sheets covered with, like, doodles and notes, and these are the things that we're gonna try. And then we went home from that, and, you know, we typed stuff up and started a small Google Plus community so that we could keep in contact. Said, all right, so if we're gonna do this, we're gonna need to set some deadlines and invite some people. So we sent out small invitations, like, to some of the game writers that we knew that were definitely feminist. It ended up being, I'm going to say, 36 writers from 14 countries, I think, total, ended up writing, something for it. Lizzie, me, and Anna Westerling took the bulk of the editing work. So there was like 2 weekends where I read every single game, and this was before we had the system in place for, like, all right, this is how many T-drops is it? So, like, I read like 4 or 5 really heavy games in a row. I was like, all right, I'm going to go and hug a kitten for a while now because the hell is dark and I need to bluff for a little while. And so we collated them and we brought in the awesome shoe, she put together the graphic design for us and made it look absolutely stunning, because Lizzie always had this vision. She wanted it to make it look like a glossy women's magazine. And it was like, yeah, that makes total sense. And so we got it to the slick, beautiful, these images. And so we, like, we had 3 and 4 hour meetings, like, all right, this is, how do we want this to look? How do you think about this one? You know, it's like, I'm not sure about how this mechanic's gonna work. It's a little, everything in the book's like, all right, do we want to make this full bleed? Do we want to make this a smaller picture? And so it was really a labor of love, and it was a lot of work. It was one of those, okay, I've done that once. I might consider doing it again if I ever do it again, though. I will definitely ask for a lot more money, because we didn't get any money. And that was a lot of hours and so what we decided as a group is, because, all right, we got 36 authors, so there's no way we're keeping track of royalties for 36 different people. So we pulled everybody and said, all right, so we're gonna sell it, We're going to run an Indiegogo. We're going to send the copies off to Festival. We're going to get it printed. It's going to look gorgeous. What should we do with the money? And pretty much everybody agreed that we wanted to do a scholarship to bring more women and non-binary game writers to conferences, to conventions, where they could get exposure to other gamers, where they could get mentorship from other gamers, where they could just get access and go to things that they might not be able to afford to go to otherwise. Mm-hmm. So we're partnering with the Credit Bureau, run by Abby Wing, to do the scholarship with the proceeds from the sale of the existing stuff. And then we're doing a brand new run that we partnered with Pelgrane to do.
Yeah.
Which is cool because it means I don't have to do it a second time. It's like, all right, we're going to get these printed. And how are we going to deliver them? Well, we're going to go to cons and we're going to drop them off in your lap. And if you want us to ship it to you, we will, but we're going to charge full shipping. And that means Lizzie had this like stack of like 50 books in her and she had to do envelopes and mailings. And it's like, all right, how do we get there so that it gets squished? And, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, there was a lot. There, I mean, I know a lot of people involved in the project, and there was a lot of it, is the sense that I got. Why was a project like that important for you to get involved in?
It was something I wanted to do. I mean, it was one of the first things that I got my feet wet with game design. It's something I've been interested in, but I didn't really have a way in. I didn't have an idea to go into it. So getting involved with the nuts and bolts first kind of helped me. It's like, all right, this is what goes into producing a game as opposed to just writing a game. So it helped to get that sense. But also, it's one of those other things, you know, all the games in there aren't necessarily my cup of tea, but I wanted them to exist. I wanted them to be in the world. I wanted people to see them. I wanted people to play them. I wanted them to be there for people to see and play and understand that you could have a game about a topic as serious as, you know, date rape. You could have a way of doing something as light and fluffy as, hey, we're going to take selfies. And have those two things can coexist in the same space and in the same frame and still be both considered, you know, a game. The games we wanted to make sure that they could all be played in about 2 hours or less, that all you really needed was book and, you know, a couple of them have a couple of things that you need more of, like Tobin, I think it was Cat Tobin's game. You need nail polish and you're it's about the emotional labor.
That's Cat Jones. Cat Jones.
Sorry, Cat.
Tobin's game is about getting an abortion in Ireland, which is about far away.
Totally different. But it's about how the interaction between, you know, nail techs and clients and how much we necessarily take that kind of labor for granted. And it's kind of a really interesting way of looking at it. It's like, you really, you know, it's one of those things that most time when you're getting your nails done, you don't really think about necessarily the person who's doing, your nails and what's going on in their lives. But it's kind of an interesting way of making you stop and do that thinking, which is a great way to foster the intersectionality that I like to see in a world.
I think that game really takes white feminism to task, actually, in like,
yeah, it does.
In like a very thoughtful and clever way, because when you're playing the client, you play a white woman and you have like all these like super valid like feminist issues that you're thinking about and that you're prompted to talk about, like, you know, your male coworker is getting, you know, raises and stuff ahead of you, and like your boss is a dick who interrupts you all the time, doesn't hear you out. So like you have all this legit shit to talk about. But if you're playing the nail artist who is like a Korean immigrant, you also have feminist concerns, and you are kind of like, this is like a totally different level.
Mm-hmm. And pretty much all the games kind of worked at that level, where it's like, all right, if you just look at it high level, oh, this kind of has this fluffy kind of skin to it, but if you actually stop and think about it while you're playing, and some of the instructions really do have that, you know, all right, stop and think about what you're doing and why you're doing it. Mm-hmm. And the games that came out of it were just so amazingly insightful at getting to that core of, hey, this is what we're talking about. And yes, this is feminist. I'm not saying this isn't feminist, but have you thought just a little deeper?
Yeah.
And it was really fun to work on.
Yeah, totally. What was your biggest like learning from that project that you're going to carry with you?
Have an agenda for a meeting. I love Lizzie. I love Anna. I love Shuo. Uh-huh. But we would go in, like, we'd have a meeting planned for an hour, and 3 hours later, we'd get off the phone. So yeah, I think that was the biggest thing I learned was if you're going to have a meeting, have an agenda, set it before you start the meeting. So a lot of it was a lot of project management learning was, all right, if you're going to do these things, this is how you should do it, and how to be hard. It's like, all right, this is the deadline. I know you're three days past the deadline. Sorry, we actually do have to say no to you. It's learning those hard management skills that I didn't necessarily have before. And it was kind of interesting.
Well, I mean, all of that is like important stuff that goes into making games. And I don't know if people find it as interesting as like, you know, capital G, capital D, game design. But like, the games that you love wouldn't exist without that stuff. Like, you would just not have them without that work and that labor that happens. Yeah. And you're someone who has, like, you've done a lot in games, and a lot of it has been, like, if not invisible, like, kind of on the sly a little bit. Like, you've had supplements and stuff in, like, Chill, as you mentioned, and Lovecraft Desk, and, like, Dead Scare. You did a thing for Masks. Mm-hmm. You're going to have a World of Misspent Youth. Like, mm-hmm. I find that really interesting that even though there's not like a Misha Barton Presents game out there, a lot of people have picked up on the fact that like, I want Misha on my team. Why do you think that is?
I really have no idea the truth of that. I have a friend of mine who keeps telling me I'm famous. I'm like, no, I'm not. I'm not famous. I don't know what the hell you're talking about. I'm not famous. I think I'm having to start to actually listen to him when I actually... One of the guys at work, I had brought in one of the games I had worked on, because I got it in print. I was like, yeah, I got it, see, look. Mm-hmm. And so that was months ago, and he's like, what was that game you worked on? And I'm like, and I actually had to stop and ask, which one? And he was like, how many of them have you worked on? And I had to stop and count. Mm-hmm. I'm like, there's that one. Some of it is... I play a lot of games. I've been playing with Brendan, who brought me in on Masks. We did a web series for Indie Plus where it was me, Andrea G, Sarah Richardson, Jen Martin with Brendan running, and we would bring in a rotating GM, and we did that for 52 games, or 26 games? 52 games. Mm-hmm. We did it for a year, every other week for a year. And it's all out there on the internet. So I find like people actually apparently watched this. They watched us play Dungeon World for a year, which I find that fascinating. And people were like actually mentioning like somebody pinged me out of the blue. I'm like, I know you don't know me, but I've been watching you play and I have questions. I'm like, why are you asking me? I'm not the final answer, but I'm not the expert here. Rob Bull, I played in a play-by-post campaign of Star Wars World, which is Andrew Medeiros's hack of a PBTA hack that does Star Wars. And we had this amazing like love story in the middle of the Star Wars universe, and it was fun, exciting. And I think the first one that I actually threw my hat in personally for was Chill, and that was an all call, and again it was one of those I took a sample of writing that I had done from a play by post campaign, and I cleaned it up and polished it up, and I sent it in as a writing sample, and they're like, this is great, can you do more of this? I'm like, yes, I guess so. And so I've been I've been a player for half my life now. Actually more than half my life. Oh God, I'm old. and so I know the gaming world from the side of a player, and I know what I like to see in a game. And so I just find, I found as I gotten older, hey, there's other people who want to see that same thing. Whereas when I was younger, it was very, you know, the trad thing was super heavy and, like, you know, it wasn't necessarily my style. I mean, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed hanging out, but I was always trying to get that subversive, hey, let's get a love story in here, or hey, can we do more about the relationship stuff in here? And so getting that into some of those games is a little odd, especially when you're the only girl at the table. Yeah. It's like, yeah, but I don't want to do feelings. I want to do banging. It's like, no, I want to do banging, but the other kind of banging. Can we do the other kind of, I'm like, no. So... So I think just bringing that sensibility to it and from playing enough with other people, they're like, okay, we like the way you play, can you write the way you play? I'm like, yeah, you could probably do that. So there I am.
That's so cool. I've never heard of someone using like a play-by-post piece for a writing sample, but it makes perfect freaking sense when I think about it. Like, yeah. that's game text.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm declaring it. All you play-by-posters out there, you're games writers. You write for games.
Exactly. I mean, it's perfect flavor text, you know. If that, you know, I don't know how to write a system to save my life, but you know, you want me to build your world? No problem. I can do that. Here you go.
Yeah, and that's a valuable skill.
Yeah.
That's so funny. I had Kim Lam on here like a few weeks ago, and she was like, I love figuring out systems and playing with them, like mathematically and stuff. But man, I get really bored with world building so fast.
So what you're saying is I should work with Kim and we should do a game.
Yes, please. Yes, that would be good. I will take executive producer. gosh. Okay, so much exciting stuff. You know what? The last thing that I want to ask you about is literally just something that I saw on your Google Plus page. That group of all Black women Civil War reenactors.
Yes!
Can we just guess about how cool that is? Where did you hear about that?
Let's see, where did I hear about it? I think it was one of those rabbit holes where I started off on something, and you click here and you click there, and it's like on the sidebar of something else that you were reading. It's like, what is that? And you click on it, it's like, ah! So I traced it back. It's like, because cosplay, my mother has sewn since before I was born. She's got a sewing, you know, she's got her sewing machine that she's had since she was my daughter's age. So she grew up sewing. I grew up sewing. I do a decent amount of, or did, I don't as much anymore, a decent amount of costuming. Mm-hmm. And I've always wanted to do, like, a Civil War era fluffy antebellum dress. Mm-hmm. But I was like, but I'm a Black chick and that totally didn't happen. So it was just a giant squeak. I think everybody, because I happened to be at work when I found it, of course, I think everybody at work heard me squeeing in the corner. Like, you understand? So it was really cool to find. It was amazing to find. I'm just trying to figure out, like, okay, how do I get down there to bug them?
And yeah, I was going to ask, like, so are you just, like, running away to join them now? Because they
seem I'm seriously cool. Considering it.
Yeah. We should just invite them to a LARP convention.
There you go.
And then everybody's minds can be mutually blown.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool. Okay, one more thing. Were you on Jeopardy?
I was.
What the heck? That's so cool. How did you get on Jeopardy?
So they every year they do the online test. Uh-huh. And it's like a half hour. You answer a bunch of questions, and then from that pool, they pull people to do interviews and mock games. So one afternoon, I went down to DC and spent the afternoon. Excuse me, pretending to play Jeopardy, and you had to do another written test, and then from that pool of applicants, they pull contestants. So yeah, I was on, we filmed it in January of 2013, I think. And it didn't air for 6 months, so I couldn't tell anybody how I had done for like 6 months. I'm like, I can't tell you. I'm not allowed. I can't.
TV's weird.
I know. It's like, it's 6 months. You'll find out July 2nd. that was pretty much what I had to tell everybody. July 2nd, you'll know. I flew out to California. Mm-hmm. Met Alex. He's absolutely as sweet and funny as he is on TV. Really nice guy. It was kind of fun.
I didn't realize the selection process was so like elaborate. Was it really like intense and competitive? Could you make a LARP about it?
It actually wasn't as competitive as you think, because they don't necessarily pull the best people, because you know they did the mock interview and they did the stories that you tell before, and so they were looking for people who definitely wanted people who were smart and could answer questions and smart, but they also didn't necessarily want robots.
Right, you have to be sort of TV-able and
so yeah, they wanted personable. You know, they wanted you to have some kind of presence on camera. And so it was kind of cool, and I'd love to see what like the notes that they were writing as everybody was doing their stuff, because my husband tried out the year after I did, and he's never gotten a call back.
Oh my!
I'm in a jeopardy. but yeah, it's the atmosphere there was just kind of, you know, hey, it's kind of fun. I mean, there weren't people like cramming in the hallway or anything. We were all like hanging out, drinking Starbucks, chilling, taking the day off work for most of us. Just kind of relaxed. Yeah.
Wow, that's so neat. I love it. Huh. Okay, I'm out of questions. I was really Jeopardy was like, it was pretty high on my notes. I wanted to be. I was like, gotta ask Misha about the real games related things, but I do want to hear about Jeopardy at some point eventually.
Yeah, it was fun. I would definitely do it again if they allow you to, but you're only allowed one shot.
That's dramatic.
Yeah, you can play until you lose, so you only get one shot.
Dang. So intense, Trebek. If my listeners want to keep up with your various projects and fun stuff that you do, is there a particular place they should go?
At the moment, it's just Google+. It's a pretty distinctive name. Look for Misha Bushager. I'm the only one in the world, probably, with that combination of name. Eventually, I probably will have my own website and stuff. It's one of those things I'm kind of noodling in the back of my head. It's like, what would I have on it if I had a website? But I don't currently have one, so I don't really have a Facebook. I do have a Twitter. It's, again, look for my name.
Oh, sweet. I didn't know you had a Twitter. I'm going to find you there. That's great. Do you tweet as many hot guys and cute animals as you do Google Plus?
No, I actually don't tweet nearly as often as I plus. And the hot guys and cute animals was... I've discovered that, you know, when people are having a bad day, hot guys and cute animals usually takes care of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like a nap and a snack, really. Like,
yeah, you know, okay, I can't give you a nap and a snack, but I can give you, you know, mostly naked Idris Elba. Have fun. Or, you know, oh, hey, look, here's Jason Momoa working out.
Yeah.
Do what you want.
You know, take what joy you can from this world, okay?
Exactly.
All right. Well, thanks for joining me, Misha. This was extremely fun and good.
Thanks for having me.
Well, huge thanks again to Misha for joining me, and as always, thank you for listening. Remember that if you want to get in touch, you can email me, that's backstorypodcast@gmail.com, or you can tweet at me, @backstorycast. Backstory is part of the One Shot Podcast Network. We've brought on a couple of new shows recently, so today, I'm going to tell you about Neoscum. Neoscum is a future fantasy comedy podcast where five Chicago improvisers antagonize their way through the role-playing classic Shadowrun. It follows a group of misfits and outsiders, a chromehead decker, a teenage candy junkie klepto, a kids show wizard with a petulant thirst for adventure, and the nastiest trucker this side of the Robo-Mason Dixon. You can find Neoscum and many other exciting audio adventures at oneshotpodcast.com. Music for Backstory is provided by Ujiko. The track is called Thinking of You, and you can hear more at soundcloud.com/UJICO. Talk to you later, heroes.